On every street corner, and indeed in every bar of the country, there's always a bunch of lads in their 30s who just, well, I suppose to put it kindly, just haven't settled down yet. Some live with their mammies, others will be sharing houses or in flats, and the odd few will have flown the coop and actually set up home of their own. The odd few. Or maybe possibly even with a woman, but not a woman that you would call a wife. Stephen J. Martin has just published his first novel called Super Chick. It's about a bunch of friends who live in Dublin and are in search of love. He joins us in studio this morning. In search of love.
That's right, Jerry. In search of love. Why not?
Right, first of all, Super Chick, the thing that fascinated me the most before we actually got into the story and the whole business of the characters themselves, and they are a fascination. They are a fascinating bunch of fellas. You published this book yourself in when you were living in Australia.
I still live in Australia. I published it.
Hence the shirt.
Oh, this is all the rage down on it.
It's like somebody threw two different coloured buckets of paint. It's nice. I like it.
It's called, well, I don't call it this, but it has been referred to as the bird poo shirt.
The bird poo shirt, I can understand that.
Yeah.
All right, that set the tone.
Okay.
All right, so you're living in Australia wearing your bird poo shirt.
Yeah.
And well, you've written this book. Well, I think you were out of work, right? You did about 2,000 words a day, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was actually, I was kind of deliberately out of work. I used to live in Japan, and I went traveling. I lived there for 8 years working away. And
what were you doing in Japan?
I was working in IT, in the investment banks in IT. Mm. So 8 years of that was kind of enough for anybody, I thought. So myself and...
You call Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. after 8 years myself en route, that's my partner, we headed off traveling around the world, and by the time we reached Australia and it was time to settle down a little bit, I didn't really think that an office job was what I was after immediately. Yeah, after all that time off.
That's what you'd run away from in the
first exactly
place.
So I always had an idea that I might be able to write a book, so I just did. I sat down, I treated it like a job pretty much, you know. I wrote every morning.
I suppose it was wrong of me to say, in fact, that you were out of work, because 2,000 words a day is very much at
well,
work.
Well, yeah, I mean, it used to take me until like the mid-afternoon. I used to have to go for a walk on the beach. I was that tired afterwards.
You know? And oh, poor you. Oh, God, please, get me my handkerchief. Whereabouts in Australia was
this? In Manly. In just outside Sydney.
Yeah, that's on the coast, is it?
Yeah, it's lovely, yeah.
Nice beaches.
Lovely beaches.
Beautiful beaches. Yeah. Glorious sunshine.
Yeah, I was a bit of a shock to the system come flying back to Dublin last Friday when it was minus 15 degrees or whatever it was.
This is our beautiful warm spring weather as well.
I mean,
you were banging this out on the old word processor, were you?
And I got to the end of it then. I made up 4 copies and I gave them out as Christmas presents. And the 4 people I gave it to thought it was great. So then I said, okay. And I looked into self-publishing as an idea.
Which can be quite an expensive and tricky business.
It can, yeah, and it can be risky too, depending on who you get to help you out to do it. There's a lot of unscrupulous, I guess in any field, there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there, and they'll gladly take your money and tell you you have a bestseller, when really you have a load of rubbish. But anyway, I did it myself, and I got 500 copies printed out, and they all sold pretty fast, actually.
And how did you sell them?
Well, I made up a website, pointedshoe.com. www.pointedshoe.com, and I did it over the website. I did it through friends,
I'm fascinated by this, because this may explain how Amazon actually originally started.
Well, maybe.
Somebody come on the website,
they'd
order the book, right?
Yeah.
This would come back to you, this email, I presume.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And you'd see Jerry Ryan, Clontarf, Dublin.
Yeah, a dozen copies,
immediately post-haste, UPS. And would you package the books yourselves?
Yeah, I'd wrap them all up and send them off to wherever they were going.
Was you and the missus doing this together?
No, she was working.
She wouldn't have to do it, basically.
Yeah, this was my little project, which was tolerated.
You're on your own, sunshine. All right, well, so that's fascinating that you managed to sell 1,000 like that.
Yeah, well, the first 100 that I sold, I brought to Japan. This is like going back a while. It was kind of an early draft. The first 100 I brought back to Japan for the World Cup in 2002. And, you know, having lived there, I knew that, you know, the price of drink wasn't cheap. And I wasn't working there anymore, so I didn't have the salary to go with the price of drink. So I brought the books over, and it was almost like a barter system. I'd exchanged them for beer while I was in Tokyo looking at Ireland play.
In the Irish pubs.
Yeah.
So I presume there wouldn't be a huge market for it. In
no, well, people were saying, like, how much is that? And I'd say 2,000 yen. They'd say, 2,000 yen, you know. And then I'd say, well, how much is that pint you're drinking? Well, it was only 1,000 yen, but still, a book lasts a lot longer.
Yeah, well, remember, 2 points for a book's not bad, actually. Yeah,
I know, if you just convert it that
now,
way.
Now, to write a book under any circumstances is a great achievement, even if it's crap, to be perfectly honest. It's a great achievement. Yeah. I'm not saying that your book's crap. So, you're there, and you're, but to write a book in a different country, which is based in your home country, because the book is based in Ireland,
it's based
right?
in Dublin, mostly Dublin. Yeah.
So, that must be quite difficult because, you know, by the time that you've worked in IT in Japan for 8 years, then you've done the usual, the Eurasia backpacking experience, which is, you know, something I'm always very envious of and probably will never do it. And then you hit the beaches of Australia. You're kind of fairly removed from Dublin culture by this stage, aren't you?
Yeah, I suppose you are in a way. But
so how do you get the thought processes going and create the characters and get the theme for the book and the story?
Well, the theme from the book, super chic. When I was in Tokyo, I was in a band called, actually called Your Matzo Dog. That was the name of the band.
Did they get that? Your Matzo Dog.
Your Matzo Dog, yeah.
So, Your Matzo Dog. See, it does sound vaguely Oriental, doesn't it?
if you say it fast.
Your Matzo Dog.
So I wrote, myself and the guitar player, Brian Dolan, we wrote a song called Super Chick. And it was just, we never even played it. We only really got as far as the lyrics. So when I was sitting down to write a book, like a couple of years later.
Can you remember the lyrics, can you?
Yeah, they're actually in the book. Yeah, it's the original Your Matzo Dog lyrics of Super Chick are in the book. But I scribbled kind of Super Chick on the top of a page and...
I want to find them. Where are they?
I don't know what page they're on now.
Roughly.
They'll be in the middle.
In the middle.
Well, he kind of writes verse by verse throughout the book.
Was it She Loved to Watch the Soccer?
Yeah, that's the one. Have you got the whole thing there?
Yep. She loved to watch the soccer and her favourite food was steak. She could put her legs behind her head. She made me chocolate cake. Her idea of a quiet night in was pizza, beer and sex. And she told me... I'm amazing and was bigger than her ex. Your matzo dog.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for that. My mum's listening.
I
wrote down Super Chick at the top of the page and I just started writing and that's how the book came about. That was the theme. I had a vague idea that there'd be guys going around Dublin looking for women.
That's me. That's me, that character there. Have you gotten Which that one? Already?
Aesop. Oh, everybody wants to be Aesop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ace was a bit of a lad. So, and then, of course, the story kind of changed as I got into it. And
how many drafts did you do? Did you just go from chapter 1 to 2 to 3 to 4?
Yeah, I did, actually. I found out later that most writers don't do that.
No, they go frequently. You'll find, like, Freddie Fawcett, I think, starts at the end and works backwards.
Only that's how he gets the twists. And,
yeah.
So, well, I didn't do that. I just sat down every day and I wrote about... I tried to get 2,000 words out. And... And then the next day I'd sit down and I'd read what I'd written the previous day. And if there was any spelling mistakes or whatever, I'd change them. And then I'd keep going. So I never really
were you quite self-critical? Did you let anybody else look at it?
Not until it was finished.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I was self-critical because I read a lot. I think if you're going to be any kind of a writer and you don't read, I think you're at a disadvantage straight away. So I've always been a reader, even as a kid, you know, reading The Famous Five or whatever. So, yeah, I was very critical. Of myself.
And what were you hoping to achieve? What kind of tone were you hoping to achieve? Were you looking for a serious story? Was it something light? I mean, I've seen people described as chick lit written by a man.
Yeah. You've seen other people, I mean.
Yeah. Other people, right. I don't think you've described it as that.
No, I haven't, but...
in fact, you said, no, it's definitely not that, so I suppose that's answered that question already.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't call it chick lit, but I wasn't... I've never read chick lit.
It's an easy read.
Yeah. I don't imagine I'd particularly enjoy it. I mean, I haven't... I don't think it would be my scene.
It's closer to the boys in Bachelor's Walk.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard it described, this one described as kind of an Irish Nick Hornby type of thing.
Yeah.
So, I guess that... Or maybe Nick Hornby mixed with early Roddy Doyle.
Yeah, so that's that, and that is Bachelor's Walk, in fact, described perfectly. Jimmy now is the main character in the book. He owns his own house. He's got a decent job. He's in middle management in a computer company in Dublin. And, funnily enough, plays in a band, in McGuigan's at the weekend. He's been dating Sandra for the past 4 years and feels she's the one for him. They're going to get married one day until she ups and leaves for Bino, who's fellow I went to school with, in fact. I doubt it's the actual Beano, though it could be. Beano leaves Jimmy's band The Grove, of course, which was a dance spot on the...
That was a little nod to the to my old haunt.
Your old dancing haunt.
Yeah.
So I put it to you, Stephen J. Martin. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of your mates in this book?
Yeah, almost all of them, in fact.
It's impossible to resist, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, What did you do?
Did you take the characters as composites and deconstruct them and then mix them together,
or did you just
copy them?
No, I couldn't have copied them. There would have been war.
War.
Yeah. So some people would point out something and go, "That's me." I remember saying that day.
Yeah.
You know, but the character might have been a girl who said it. You know, so then they get all upset. But
that's the way to do it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. So I said, "Well, obviously it's not you because you're not."
And
a
did
girl
you work? Did you have separate blackboards and have put them? You know, the Beano there, Jimmy there, and work the characters out of all your mates. Is that how you did?
No.
Were you
just
that Machiavellian?
No. I didn't. I wasn't trying to make sure everybody got a fair crack at the whip. I just took the best bits out of everybody. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, there's plenty of material there.
So what are they looking for, these boys?
Well, it's mostly Jimmy is the ringleader. He's the one who's after getting dumped, and he's got a great job, and he's in the band, and he's talented, and he's good looking, and all that. So when he gets dumped, it kind of affects him fairly badly. He has a bit of a crisis. So it's him that kind of gets the rest of them into this idea of looking for this girl, Super Chick, because first of all, when it happens, he becomes very disillusioned, and he loses a lot of self confidence, and he's disillusioned with women, especially. But then he decides, no, there's definitely a super chick out there, the perfect woman, and he reckons he's going to go out there and find it. But because he's still...
And is he propelled by himself, or is his ma's obsessed with him getting married, isn't she?
Yeah, well, I think that's... Jimmy's like 30 years old, you know, 30-year-old single Irish man.
To become obsessed with your son getting married, you know, at that stage.
Yeah. And she had great hopes for himself and Sandra as well, of course, after 4 years. So when Sandra departs with Beano, it's obviously a source of great concern to his mother. She doesn't help, you know, every little bit of pressure just makes them more and more desperate. So himself and the lads, anyway, he gets the other lads to sit in on this quest to find the perfect woman. So that's how it starts.
So it's got it does have a Nick Hornby ring to it. In fact, it has a sort of train spotting ring to it at that point. Again, I mean, for instance, when you look at train spotting, train spotting as a story, now it's brilliant. It's a wonderfully constructed story.
Absolutely.
And it hurtles along with a fantastic pace. But the idea of a gang of men together at that stage in their lives, staying together, I mean, in Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction, they're bonded together by criminality.
Yeah.
I suppose in Trainspotting, they're bonded together by drugs.
Yeah.
I suppose, yes, there is a common bond in all of those stories, and it's usually quite a powerful thing, very particular to men as well.
Yeah.
What bonds these fellas together? Is it really the search for a woman? Is that strong enough?
Not really. I mean, because they were bonded together before that. Yeah.
Kind
of Timmy the dog. We have a little Japanese guy, though. Yeah, he's number five. Shiggy, we call him. But, no... I wouldn't say they were bonded particularly by this quest because they were already great mates beforehand. I kind of picture the lads being in there around 30 years old because that was probably the latest age I could get away with something like this.
Yeah.
Because my own experience of coming back from Japan every year for Christmas or whatever is that every year I'd come back and somebody else would have fallen off the radar a little bit.
Mm.
And by the time I got to about, you know, 30, 31, there weren't really that many of my old mates who are still...
Were they married?
Together and, yeah, married or emigrated or, you know, with long-term girlfriends and a couple of kids and all that, so.
Do you ever come back and, you know, meet Whacker or one of the lads and suddenly he's not coming out anymore?
Absolutely, all the time.
And he speaks to you on the doorstep, he doesn't invite you into the house. Have you had that experience?
No, it hasn't been that bad, but definitely you see them less and less. You'd always get invited in for a
couple of days. And somebody shouting from the kitchen going, "Who's that, Whacker?" That's nobody. It's a milkman. You're saying, "I'm not the bleeding milkman. I'm one of your mates. Why won't you let me in anyway?" She doesn't like pillows coming. Anyway, if you do come in, you have to take off your shoes.
Well, that's in my house, actually. No one's allowed to wear shoes in my house.
Well, that's same here. It's funny that you mentioned that, but it's one thing I put my foot down on. I'll wear shoes.
Yeah.
Even if I'm going to dirty the carpet.
Okay. Well, not if you come to
Do you
my
take
house,
your so. Shoes off, do you?
I do, yeah. Well, we don't have carpet just here.
Yeah, big wuss. So apparently now, apparently it's not that unusual for men to take their shoes off. You have some supporters out there. Is that really true, Jenny, that those guys are... Who are they, men or women ringing up saying that he's great for taking the shoes off? Women ringing up. And that I'm what? I'm a wanker. Isn't that what they're saying? Yes. All right, 15 minutes to 11 o'clock. Super Chick, Stephen J. Martin, who takes his shoes off because his missus makes him do so. All men are bastards, it says on the back of the book.
Read that again, Jerry. All women.
All women. There you go. There's the Freudian. That's the Freudian, isn't it? Isn't that a fantastic mistake?
You, Jerry. That's why you read it.
Isn't that a fantastic mistake? Now, that explain right about that. Mm. That's the conditioning, the oppression, the weight that we're labouring under. Look. Mm.
Well, there you go. You see, I didn't know whether to put that on the back cover because it's a pretty provocative thing to say.
And but it's brilliant because I looked at it and it's very clearly women, right?
Yeah.
Okay? And it's written on the back cover. What do you see? You see men, don't you? You don't see women. You see all men are bastards. That's very clever. I mean, appalling and offensive, but very clever. Am I saying all the right things? All right, so you're putting the idea together, and this is a group of guys, not unlike the Trainspotters, not unlike the Reservoir Dogs, except they're not that violent, and they're not involved in crime, and not quite the Famous Five, because they're looking for a girl. And why are they looking for this girl? Is it that they've bonded together to help their mate, or is it just it gives them a reason for being together?
Well, it's probably they're helping their mate more than anything. They would have been together anyway, I'd say, because the lads they're in a band, they all kind of meet up all the time at the weekends and stuff. But yeah, they're together now for Jimmy, so we can find this girl. But in doing so, maybe they find their own girl. Like one of them, Marco, he actually has a girl already. But Jimmy's answer to that is, you know, are you just going through the motions with this girl? Or, you know, is Super Chick, maybe you already have Super Chick, but you probably don't even know it. Because,
and can you define Super Chick for us?
No. I'd say Super Chick is probably different for every person, you know. Some people might think it's someone who looks great, you know, to them, or someone who's has a sense of humor, or someone who's who has a great job, or the guy you were talking to yesterday who wrote the book about having the affair.
Oh yeah. What an incredible story. Well, did you believe him, did you?
I don't know. I mean, his Super Chick would probably be somebody who could keep their gob shut, you know. That's about the size of it.
That would be exactly, or keep it open. another stupid puerile remark, Jenny. You should be trying to stop this. Did you just go and you listened to him yesterday?
Yeah,
did you? We did an interview with a guy, I can't even remember his name, it's an American guy, and he's written a book called Affairs on How to Get Away with It, I think. And, now, he says it's been taken off the air, but taken off the shelves in the bookshops in the United States. And it's available here in Ireland. And there was huge interest in it afterwards, you know. Did you believe him?
I don't know. I mean,
said his first wife is dead. That's how he's getting away with writing it. And
yeah, no, I don't know. To do something like that, I mean, to have an affair. And now, before I start down this road,
I'm not having an affair.
I'm not qualified to talk about this at all.
I know you're not. Just objectively, as a bloke.
Okay, as a bloke, I'd say if you're going to go around the place having an affair, it must mean at least the way he said it, he has you like how to do it without getting caught.
Yeah,
you know how to
and
do
what
it properly
to do when you get caught.
Yeah, so. I mean that makes you a very
as a man,
dishonest
it's
person,
also
isn't it?
As a woman as well, like the influence there for women.
I honestly think a woman, now this is, again, just between yourself and yourself, Jerry, I think women will probably be a lot better at the clandestine stuff than men.
We were talking about this yesterday. That's interesting you said that, because my absolute belief is that there are as many women being unfaithful to their husbands as there are husbands, our partners, being unfaithful to their female counterparts. But it's just that women will do it and they won't say a word about it, they won't boast about it, they won't brag about it, they'll tell nobody about it, they don't change their lifestyle, they don't change their perfume, they don't change their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Men just make a complete dog's dinner of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that'd be me. I mean, if I even tried to do that, I'd you know, Ruth would say to me, oh, I see you shaved, you know, and I'd be rubbing my chin like an idiot, not even remember having shaved. You know, so
How to Have Your Cake and Eat It. That's the name of the book.
Yeah.
And the author was H. Cameron Burns. And there was a huge interest in it. Huge interest. None of those guys are like that, though.
No, I don't think so. Well, possibly one of them, but he wouldn't really be in a situation where he could have an affair because he wouldn't have a steady relationship in the first place.
But he'd hopefully try and have one.
Yeah, he tried to have as many affairs as he possibly could at the same time.
And of course, football team and a band, they were two of the last bastions when you were in your 30s.
Yeah, that was it then,
of being able to get out. Because let's be honest, when you get into your 30s and you're in a relationship, a stable relationship or a marriage, you can't say, I'm just going out now, right, I'll see you later. Well, most blokes can't. But if you're in a band, you can say that I've got to rehearse.
Yeah, you've got this thing you're doing,
I've got to play football. I can't be the only guy not to turn up.
Yeah.
So they're two of the few things you could do, right? Or if you're rich, you could say I'm going flying or we're building a Zeppelin or something like that. Yes. It has to be a reason. So these boys, they're single, and except for the one fella. That's how they're able to do this, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And they have a great time doing it. I mean, it's, what you ask them to do is to go out and meet women in a pub. You know, it's not like you're asking them to learn, you know, Latin or something. So, yeah, they all have a great time.
And what's the modus operandi? Remind me.
For the lads or in general?
For the lads. I presume this reflects in general.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's they don't know what to do. They start off, they're looking in, like, in their work, you know, just looking at women in a different way, maybe. Seeing this girl that I've been just looking through for the last while, maybe she could be
maybe
something special,
and
I never even realised it. And then they take it on to the rest of their lives, you know, in the pub, on the street, anywhere at all, you know, anywhere.
And are they given a template of questions?
No, well, they come up with
approach.
At the start of the book, they have to ask, that was the hardest part, actually. They have to ask themselves, well, what is Super Chick? Who is this perfect girl if I go looking for a girl, you know? I often thought afterwards that, you know, if a guy was going to go looking for the perfect girl, the first thing he might do is actually have a quick look at himself, you know, before he gets started.
Yeah, but we're perfect to start off with. We can reach the
world.
Well,
there's always, you know, there could be areas of your attitudes or your ideas or your, you know, your physique or maybe even your personal hygiene that could do with a bit of tweaking before you embark on this quest. You know,
you look fairly clean to me.
I am, except for the bird poo shorts. Yeah, but that's by design.
So they're forced to ask themselves these questions.
Yeah,
do they discover anything about themselves?
I think by the end of it, they do for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What are the main things they discover about themselves, and are they the things that? All of us eventually discover.
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah. It just, they all grow up a little bit. That's the main thing, yeah.
Do I think the overwhelming thing that I certainly have discovered about myself at a very late stage in life is my incredible and indeed noteworthy consistency in immaturity. Managing to remain immature up until very, very recently.
Yeah. That's pretty.
Having the mental age of about 15 or 16, up until about 2 or 3 years ago.
What happened 2 or 3 years ago then?
I don't know. I think the older you get, and it starts in your 30s, being a teenager in your mind, in your brain, with the ambitions of a teenage boy and the desires of a teenage boy and the irresponsibility of a teenage boy, that becomes quite wearing as you get older.
It does, yeah. I know. Well, that's when you start drinking a lot more wine than you drink beer.
Exactly.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And a lot more videos than...
than going out to the cinema.
Yeah, absolutely.
And being quite happy to sit at home.
Yeah.
And being less of a danger to your missus or anybody else, for that matter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's basically it. Yeah. So those guys have to get super chick before...
Before
X age.
Yeah. Before they end up being 40, and then what's going to happen?
Well, they're banjos then, aren't they?
Absolutely. That'll be a sequel.
Will there be a sequel? Because how long did it take you to write, by the way?
It's altogether, it took about 6 months, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah. And
Were you spellbound with yourself at the end of it for being able to do it?
I was very tired.
That's a real Dublin answer, isn't it? How were you after that? I mean, you must have been felt drained, were you? I mean, did you feel, you know, I mean, did you feel culturally enhanced? No, I was very tired.
Yeah. No, I did. I was pretty chuffed, but again, it's very hard to be objective. If you've never done something like that before, and then you write this book and you give it to people, your mates say, and they say, oh yeah, I read your book and it was great. And then you kind of go,
are they saying, oh God, it's a great achievement for you. I didn't even know you could write. Didn't even know you could spell your name. You're trying to figure out what do they actually mean by it's great.
Well, if they're a bit guarded, you can tell, I think. But I thought they were a bit, it's like fairly sincere, but I wasn't sure. I was, you know, it's my first time. So it was only afterwards when people that I didn't know at all were sending me emails saying, oh, I got your book off this bloke and or whatever.
That's a good
And
book.
I thought it was great. I just wanted to say, well done, you know. And that was like, I used to sit there and I'd get up in the morning, turn on the email, and these things would pop up. And I go, God, this is, I could actually be a writer, you know. There could actually be a career in this for me.
But you not go, I'm not a writer. I mean, nobody knows.
Well, that's what I'm doing now, Jerry. I'm saying to myself, I'm not on the Jerry Ryan show.
Stick on those headphones for a second there. Sheila, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Very good.
Good. You have a friend of mine there, which I believe.
Yes, his name is Stephen.
Yeah, well, we call him Steve.
Steve. You know him. Where did you meet him?
I met him in Tokyo.
Would you like to tell us a bit about him?
Oh, God.
That's it. The cat's out of the bag. I met Steve. I went over to Japan in 94. And Steve, I'd say, was probably one of the first people I met going in the door. We were involved in amateur dramatics over there, and he directed me in a couple of shows.
That's right, that's when he was working for the Catholic Diaspora Society, was it?
Yeah, something like that. And he was, of course, my mentor on and off the stage, you know.
Your mentor?
Yes, of course.
He mentored you, did he?
He mentored me.
Was he good?
Oh, the best, always, yes, yes. And Ruth knew all about it. It was all very above board. But, no, he was just, he was one of those stalwarts when you're overseas. Like, you know, Steve is like a person that everyone would gravitate toward. You know, you'd always find him in the middle of anything that was going on. And a bit of a catalyst, I would regard him. You know, he seems to draw these funny stories out of people. So it's kind of easy. It's kind of cheap for him to put it into a book. Because
I know it is cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, well, not cheap.
Cheap but effective.
It worked. It did
Benny
work.
Hill used to do that. You know, he used to sit in cafes listening to people's conversations and writing it all down in a little book.
Well, you know, somebody has to. I mean, I'm working in a shop myself. And we keep a diary in store, and I swear if I put it all into a book, nobody would believe it.
No, but you will one day, won't you, after Stephen's done this?
Well, you know, he does inspire one into that sort of thing, yes, and at the moment we're all on.
And was he a nice guy? I mean, was he romantic? Was he charming?
Careful now, Sheila.
I remember one Sunday.
Oh, God.
And I walked into Bewley's, and it was inside the first 6 months.
Bewley's in Tokyo?
Yeah, it's not there anymore, but it was the only place you could get a Guinness in Tokyo when we went out there.
Right.
In a can. It was also the only place you could get the Sunday Times. So you'd go into Bewley's on a Sunday and you'd be guaranteed to meet somebody sort of nursing the hangover from Friday and Saturday night. And I walked in one Sunday and there was Steve sitting with his Guinness and the paper and a bunch of roses.
A bunch of roses, yeah.
Just in case anybody dropped in that looked okay.
Yeah, you know, and I sat down chatting away. So what's the flowers for? Somebody's birthday or what? Like, you know, and Steve's like, no, just because. And I was like, here.
Because what?
I don't know. Maybe he did something bad that he was trying to make up for. But no, he's just the kind of guy that would go out and buy a.
Well, you mean he was bringing these back to his own bird?
He was bringing them back to Ruth, yeah, just because.
Ah, oh, Stephen, aren't you gorgeous?
Yeah, not anymore. That's the end of it now.
So you're trying to... Sheely's trying to peddle this devil may care sort of...
He's a big softy. He really,
you know,
is a big softy.
Bachelor boy, bollocky Bill thing, you know, and he's actually just a big softy, lovely, huggable, very nice guy who takes his shoes off
now,
when he comes
in. You'd want to ask Ruth all about that now. I mean, I couldn't really comment just how lovely huggy he is.
Ah, well, you know, he is. He's lovely. He's a very physically attractive man, you know.
Thanks, Ruth.
Ruth, where are you? Ruth, phone us now.
She's in Sydney.
Thank God.
She's in Sydney.
Can you get this show on the internet?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, that's it now.
Sorry, Ruth.
I think she'd be delighted to hear.
Well,
to hear the way that
so,
you've been described this morning. So, Sheila, you're back from Tokyo.
Yeah, I came back 4 years ago.
Did you buy the book?
I bought it twice. It was so good, I bought it twice. I funded some of the original.
Did you buy it with beer or with yen?
I think I bought it with dollars originally.
Okay, well, the international currency will be on next. Okay, Sheila, thank you very much for that endorsement.
And thank you, Sheila, for me too. Yeah.
Cheers. Bye.
Oh, they love you, Stephen. They love you. Okay, so anyway, you come back home and Mercia Press, I think, isn't it, decided to...
That's right, yeah. They
treat it like a real book.
Exactly. I talked to them last summer and... We got a deal going, and it's just a dream come true. It's fantastic, absolutely brilliant.
So, are you a writer?
I don't know yet. In Easton's in town the other day, and I was signing copies of the book, and the girl said, you know, she'd only been here a short while, working in Easton's, and that I you know, she hadn't met that many writers, and I said, oh, I don't know if I'm a writer, you know. But she said, well, you've got a book. And I said, well, I suppose so, yeah. So I guess so, yeah. But I don't know. Maybe if I write another couple of books and make a,
I think you will. And
when I buy my first yacht from the proceeds of a book, then I'll say yes, I'm a writer.
All right, I'll see you in Monte Carlo then. Okay, yeah. Stephen J. Martin, Super Chick. It's a great read. You'll really enjoy it. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah, actually, tomorrow in Arnott's there's a big in Arnott's window there's a big display and in the windows, and there's a real live Super Chick's going to be in there all day from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.
That's
so you can drop by
out,
and say
it?
Hello.
If you want to see what a real Super Chick looks like, it's Arnott's window tomorrow.
It's endorsed by me, big cuddly Steve.
Steve, good morning and the very best of luck to you.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
Good morning.